Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, the equinox and the upcoming harvest moon, and innovative ideas from the 3.8 billion years of life on Earth. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Things are changing in the sky because of the way Earth is tilting on its axis. And what happens at this time of year for the Northern Hemisphere is that we have this phenomenon of the harvest moon, the full harvest moon that's coming up on September 29th or 30th.
That's sky watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
The first evidence of a planet's destruction by its aging star has been discovered by an international team of astronomers. The evidence indicates that the missing planet was devoured as the star began expanding into a red giant, the stellar equivalent of advanced age. The paper describing this discovery is posted in an early online edition of the astrophysical journal Letters.
Have you seen the recent video of a fire tornado? It was captured by filmmaker Chris Tangy and posted to YouTube on September 16th. Tangy of Alice Springs Film and Television was scouting locations near Curtin Springs Station in Australia. He spotted a small fire burning in nearby bushland and decided to start filming. Shortly thereafter, a whirlwind touched down into the fire, carrying the flames skyward. It's a fire tornado, and you can see this amazing video at earthsky.org.
The latest global climate report has been released by the National Climatic Data Center, and the results find that August 2012 was the fourth warmest August ever recorded since record-keeping began in 1880. Temperatures have been above the norm since the middle of the 1980s.
A new study reveals that only a fourth of ocean surface has been surveyed for whales and dolphins in the past decade. It is only possible to identify detrimental influences and collect basic information for research and environmental protection if data on marine organisms is collected regularly. First and foremost, it will be necessary to observe international waters more closely and develop new analytical methods, concludes the study, which is published in the journal PLOS-1.
According to NASA, summer of 2012 has been the most severe wildfire season Russia has faced in a decade. By July 2012, more land in Russia had already burned than in the whole summer of 2010, when intense wildfires affected western Russia. Unlike 2010, most of the 2012 fires have burned in remote parts of eastern and central Siberia. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard.
This week's Song of the Week is by Austin-based trio Ume, spelled U-M-E. They just kickstarted a fundraising campaign to help them record their next album with Grammy Award-winning producer Adam Kasper. So visit their Kickstarter page and help them out if you can. This song is called Run Wild off their album Phantoms.
Yeah.
Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, the equinox, and the upcoming harvest moon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Jorge. The equinox. So some of you are going to be hearing this program after the equinox. The equinox is September 22nd, 2012. But the harvest moon is something that we can all look forward to. The harvest moon is coming up, and it's going to be happening on the night of September 29th or 30th, depending on your time zone.
So what just happened with this equinox?
Well, so an equinox is a point midway between a solstice, one solstice and another. For us, the summer solstice and the winter solstice coming up in December. For the southern hemisphere, of course, the seasons are reversed. So whereas this is our fall equinox, it's their spring equinox.
Awesome. And it also, I understand it has to do with the tilt of the Earth, that it's upright with respect to the plane that the Earth makes around the sun, right?
Well, not exactly. And it's kind of hard to picture all this unless you have a picture in front of you of what's going on. But the Earth is tilted on its axis by 23.5 degrees. So at winter and summer, that's when the tilt is most extreme, or not the tilt is most extreme, but where we are on Earth, the tilt doesn't change. But we are on Earth is such that we are receiving the sun's rays of light and warmth most directly. That's summer. So if we're receiving the sun's rays more indirectly because we're on the part of Earth that's tilted away from the sun, that's winter. So now we're here at an equinox. We're kind of midway between those two extreme seasons.
And that has to do with the sun, but something wonderful is happening with the moon as well.
Right. And so what happens in the night sky at all times of year is that things are changing in the sky because of the way Earth is tilting on its axis. And what happens at this time of year for the northern hemisphere is that we have this phenomenon of the harvest moon, the full harvest moon that's coming up on September 29th or 30th.
What is a harvest moon?
Well, so people have a lot of mythology surrounding the harvest moon, and a lot of people know the phrase harvest moon. It's been popularized in songs and so on. But what it is, it's really an actual phenomenon that occurs at this time of year. Usually the moon will rise over Earth's eastern horizon about 50 minutes later every day. So every single day of the year, the moon is rising about 50 minutes later. But in the fall, and I'm talking fall now, northern hemisphere fall at this time of year, for the southern hemisphere, this is going on in the month of March. But in the fall, that time between moon rises is shortened. It's only about 30 minutes later every day, depending on your latitude, exactly how much later. But what happens is that coming up this week on, say, the 27th, September 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, what's happening is that the moon, there's this shortened period of time between sunset and moonrise. And so we'll see the moon on the horizon for several nights in a row, and that's the harvest moon. It's almost as if this is a month where we have several full moons in a row, because, of course, the full moon is characterized by being opposite the sun and by rising in the east after sunset. So that's going to happen for several nights in a row here in late September 2012.
Yeah, this is a great time to be a sky watcher. We have the equinox. We have the harvest moon. Is there a relationship between those two?
Well, in sky lore, and officially, and I guess there's nothing really official about sky lore, but in sky lore, the harvest moon is the closest full moon to the autumn equinox. And that's what makes this September 29th or September 30th full moon the harvest moon. The full moon that comes after that, is the full moon after the harvest moon, is always called the hunter's moon. So this year, that hunter's moon will come in October.
I imagine in folklore, the harvest moon had something to do with harvest, and it was a good light to use to do some late harvesting as well.
That's exactly right, and that's why it has the name harvest moon. So as I said, instead of there being this 50-minute interval between successive moonrises, there's a shortened interval between successive moonrises. And so that means that there's no long period of darkness between sunset and moonrise. And in the old days, before the days of tractor lights, people used the light of the moon to bring in the crops. And so this autumn full moon was called the harvest moon.
And this moon, this harvest moon, maybe it's just because I pay more attention to it or something, but it seems bigger. It seems, you know, brighter. What's really happening with it?
Well, as I said, there's more opportunities this month to see the moon shortly after sunset, to see the moon low in the sky shortly after sunset. And people tend to be out and about shortly after sunset. I mean, that's a time of night when people are, you know, coming home from their jobs or they're running, you know, home from a restaurant or whatever they're doing. And people notice the moon on the horizon. When the moon is low in the sky like that, it looks bigger than normal. And that's not just the harvest moon. That's any full moon. That's what's known as the moon illusion. It's actually a psychological effect that, you know, people have different ideas about what causes it. But it's a psychological effect. It's not a physical effect. It's something that our minds are doing. Any full moon just looks bigger than normal near the horizon. And around the time of the harvest moon, you're likely to see that moon on the horizon. So people think that the harvest moon is bigger than other full moons or brighter than other full moons. It's really not. In fact, this harvest moon of 2012 is a little bit farther away from us in its orbit than some full moons have been throughout this past year. And so it's actually a little fainter than some full moons by a very small amount. But people will still, because it's got that mystique of the harvest moon, people will see it and they'll be like, wow, the harvest moon, it's bigger and brighter.
Is there anything special about this 2012 harvest moon?
Only that it's like any full moon and like any harvest moon, it's very beautiful. And Jorge, you should go out and watch for it. So the time to see it would be around September 29th and 30th. You can also see it the day before and after that, the 27th or October 1st. Even into those days, you're going to see a very full-looking moon in the night sky, and that will be our 2012 harvest moon.
Awesome. So yeah, and also if you want to learn more about the harvest moon or about the moon illusion, I know you have an article on this at earthsky.org.
We sure do. So we welcome you to come and check that out.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Heard globally on over 1,200 stations, including Voice of America. Janine Benyus is well known as a popularizer of biomimicry, learning strategies from nature and applying them to human problems. She's the co-founder of the Biomimicry Guild, which consults with industry to design more sustainable products, and she's the president of the Biomimicry Institute, a nonprofit that promotes the transfer of ideas, designs, and strategies from biology to sustainable human systems design. Earth Sky spoke with Janine Benyus outside her home in Montana. Ms. Benyus, what is biomimicry and how did it come to be?
Biomimicry is innovation inspired by nature. It's the process of looking at something like a leaf and trying to figure out how to make a better solar cell. It's something that's been going on for a long time, actually, if you think about the Wright brothers and looking at turkey vultures to learn about dragon lift in flight. But now it's actually becoming one of the ways that engineers and product designers and architects do their work. It's become popular in the design disciplines, mainly, I think, because people are looking for more sustainable ways to do things, to sip energy instead of guzzle it, and to shave materials, and to do things in less toxic ways. And organisms know how to do this. After 3.8 billion years, life has learned what works and what's appropriate on the planet. And right now, that's what the people trying to redesign our world are looking for, a way for us to live here in a way that enhances this place. Organisms know how to do that.
What are some of your favorite examples of biomimicry?
I like looking at what organisms do that's completely different from how we do the same thing. So, for instance, this peacock feather, if we were to make this, we would use chemicals, pigments, to make it. It actually has, the only pigment is brown. It's done with structural color. It's done with transparent layers. When light reflects back to us through those layers, it creates the color blue or green or gold to your eye. There's now an e-reader display screen that uses the same principle, and it's made by Qualcomm, and it needs no backlighting because it uses layers and the ambient light to create the different color pixels to your eye. So it's an incredibly low energy way to do it. Life doesn't use detergent to clean itself. If you think of things like leaves that need to stay clean, you wonder how do they keep the dust off them? The famous example is the lotus leaf. That's a leaf that is in a muddy area, and yet it's very clean and pristine. It's been mimicked. The way it keeps itself clean is it has bumps on its surface. When rainwater comes, it balls up. Dirt particles teeter on those bumps, and the rainwater balls them away, pearls them away. And that's been mimicked in building facade paint called Lotusin that when it dries, it's got that bumpy structure. And rainwater cleans the building instead of sandblasting, instead of detergents. It's the same thing in fabrics, and it's coming out in all kinds of products now. I really like the examples of us starting to do what plants do and what organisms like mollusks do in the ocean and corals do, and that is takes CO2 as a building material. So there's a new kind of biodegradable plastic that is 50% by weight, it's CO2 as the feedstock. There's also a new kind of cement. It's an alternative for Portland cement that is a major ingredient in concrete. But this takes CO2 from smokestacks. Using the recipe of the coral reef, it actually, and water with minerals in it, it actually creates an alternative cement that sequesters CO2. I also like the littlest organisms can be brilliant. So there are organisms called brine shrimp that are able to dry out almost completely and then exist for years in that state without dying. And the way they do it is they preserve their cellular material. They're kind of a shrink wrap sugar that wraps around their cellular material. And we're mimicking this in a new way to encapsulate vaccines so that they need no refrigeration, which is huge. 50% of the people who need vaccines don't get them because of break in the cold chain. So that's a big breakthrough from a very small organism. We're also learning a lot from sharks. Sharks, of course, the shark skin suits that you heard about in the Olympics that allowed swimmers to go very, very fast. That same sort of material is being put on airplanes and on the hulls of ships. But the new thing that we're learning from sharks is that the skin of the Galapagos shark is rippled in such a way that it keeps bacteria from landing on the surface of its skin. This is being mimicked in a thin film product called Sharklet that is being used a lot in hospitals now for doorknobs and railings and hospital beds. And what it does is it repels bacteria, but without chemicals. And this is really important as we try to reduce our use of antibiotics, because we know that those, you know, breed for resistance. So we have superbugs. So in the fight against superbugs, having a physical rather than a chemical means of repelling bacteria is really, really important.
You've been listening to author and innovation consultant Janine Benyus. Come to earthsky.org for video of our interview with Benyus at her home near the mountains of Montana. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't end is terrifying. What